the biggest thing that we feel was missed in the budget in terms of the allocation of expenditures that they failed to deal with housing and the housing crisis at all. They also failed to broaden the tax base, which would be another issue for us. But in terms of housing, they announced 21,000 units in 2017 through HAP, the Housing Assistance Programme. But HAP doesn't actually provide any supply, and that is the problem with housing in this country. We don't have enough supply. So what you have, are you going to have 20... They foresee 21,000 people moving onto the housing assistance payment scheme. Now, if you're lucky enough to find accommodation, particularly in Dublin, and you're on that scheme, the chances are you won't be able to afford the rent. So you're going to end up supplementing the scheme, and 25% of that 21,000 people are going to be moving over from rent supplement. So it's not going to solve supply. It's still relying on the private rented sector. What will happen is rents are still going to increase, and those people who have HAP and if they're lucky enough to find accommodation are going to end up topping up their rent under the table to the landlord. It's not going to solve the problem. And the only supply that they announced, which is local authority build, is 4,450 units. You know, that's a drop in the ocean. So when you think about the money that was available, obviously, we would argue that supply has to be funded off balance sheet and government needs to build unit. But if you just look at it, the money they had and the money they gave to housing, they could have used it in much more productive ways. You know, the tax incentives for landlords, 36% of the landlords registered with the PRTB, they're accidental landlords, so they've one or two properties. They don't want to be landlords. So a 5% increase in the tax incentive isn't going to get them to stay in the business of being landlords. They want to get out of it, you know, because for most of those people, it's a second property that could be in arrears and they don't want that property anymore. That's not going to help landlords. It's not going to increase supply again. Then in terms of help to buy, all that is really going to do is increase prices in Dublin in particular and in the commuter belts, because vendors will know that first-time buyers are going to be able to get up to 5% from the state, so they'll just add that. If there is more than one first-time buyer competing to buy a house, it's just going to fuel the price. The money is ultimately going to go to builders and developers. That money could have been used in a much better way. And one of the ways that had been discussed prior to the budget is looking at some sort of way the state could guarantee the loans or take a stake in the house. That would have, if you're going to go that way to help first-time buyers, that would have been a better use, because it would mean that people aren't going to be borrowing beyond their means. Because the worry is that if vendors know you have this rebate from the state, they'll up the price. Will banks let you borrow beyond your means because they also know you'll have access to that money? And then when another crash comes, are you going to be left in negative equity? And in Dublin, it's probably just going to fuel rent prices, because some first-time buyers, even though they can get the rebate, will end up being stuck in private rented accommodation, and that will put more pressure on demand.
I mean, it's hard to meet that demand if you don't have the infrastructure or the finances to build, which would be the ideal solution. But, I mean, there's an argument as well that we're not inclined to live in more sort of denser accommodation structures like apartments and stuff like they do on the continent. We tend to want the house with the garden, and that makes it difficult as well because you run out of space.
Yes, I mean, that's one challenge. We need to rethink how we live, particularly in urban areas in Dublin. Like, realistically, how many units can you build with a back garden? Very few, as opposed to apartments. In terms of, we'd say, social housing supply, the local authorities are sitting on actually vast tracts of land in Dublin. They need to start building on them. In terms of private supply and in terms of overall design, there's been lots of discussion about this, and we do need to rethink, you know, density of housing, but also how we build units. If you look at the continent, most apartments, single, usually lived in by a single person or a family apartment, it's quite large, but they have simple things like communal areas for refuse, for laundry. You've got adequate storage space. You know, the hallways are a decent size. You do have some sort of access to an outdoor area. There's usually common parks between apartment blocks. So we need to look at how we design them. And, you know, at the moment, there was an announcement a couple of weeks ago I saw on the front page of the Times property section for an announcement in the Docklands of 273 luxury apartments. Why are we building luxury apartments that are going to be sold at luxury prices? We should be building decent size, affordable apartments that can accommodate families and people of various ages and that are adaptable. Like luxury apartments is just bringing us back to where we were, you know, 10 years ago. And it's actually quite worrying that we seem to be going right back to where we were. Property prices are rising and nothing seems to be happening to stop it. And in terms of building, especially social housing building, although we've had, you know, they launched Rebuilding Ireland, there was the report in 2015, the new social housing strategy, no building is actually happening. There's sort of inertia at government level in terms of how you deal with the problem, and government needs to start building houses. It needs to go and borrow the money off the books. You can borrow it at 1%. It makes sense to borrow money now and to build social housing units. So those people are taken off the waiting list. They're taken out of the private rented market, and that will ease the pressure on everyone.
And what about the things that they did right in the budget? I mean, were there things that you thought, well, actually, thankfully, they're finally addressing this?
We were very pleased. You know, we welcomed the increase in social welfare rates, particularly that it was for everyone. You know, pensioners, the unemployed, people with the disability, carers, lone parents. So that's really welcome. It's positive. It's unfortunate that it's not for the full year, but it's great that it's there now. It's going some way towards meeting the cost of inflation. We also welcome the investment in some of the rural programmes. There still isn't investment in broadband, but the rural social scheme, for example, is expanded. That's positive. We welcome the concept of a single affordable childcare scheme and system. It's important, though, that parents are able to choose the childcare that's most suitable for them and that they want. At the moment, the money is not significant. So for a lot of families this time around, it actually won't make a huge difference. I think it works out as about 50, the subsidy that's going to be paid to TUSLA registered either childminders or childcare centres works out at about 50 cent an hour, so it's not huge. It's not going to make a huge difference to families, but the idea of trying to get all the different schemes into one place and to streamline it, that is positive, but a lot more money should have gone into it than did in the budget. That's the challenge. So I don't think it's going to make a huge difference to a lot of families this year. And then there is the challenge of, you know, families who will be just above the income threshold, maybe just by 5 or 10 euros, but they won't be entitled to the subsidy. So there wasn't really an examination of how you taper it. And I think that's really important. It happens with medical cards all the time, that once you're just above the threshold, you lose it. And that has a huge impact on a family. And the fact that you might only be 20 euros above the threshold, but it means you're not entitled to the subsidy, that might impact on people's choices about work. And it's unfortunate the tapering wasn't part of it. And we'd hope that, you know, it's not due to start until next September. So we'd hope in the intervening period that maybe the department might look at tapering and the impacts on those families that will be just above the threshold.
You also look at moving beyond GDP. I mean, yeah. It's hard to do that, though, isn't it? Because we're used to one idea of an economic model. And if you start saying, well, we need to measure other things like wellness or social cohesion, those things are very nebulous and they're hard to pin down.
They are. Now, we would argue that when you're moving beyond GDP, well, we do need to move beyond GDP as a result, just looking at the 26% growth rate we had. The Minister for Finance used it, and they, in one sense, they call it leprechaun economics, and they're going to change how they measure. And the other way, they use it to look at our debt to GDP ratio, because as a result of that huge increase, it's come down significantly. But in terms of, you know, we've signed up to the climate agreement, the Paris Agreement, COP21, sustainable development goals. You do need to move beyond GDP. And it's more than just measuring things like wellness. And actually, the CSO are in front of the Oireachtas Committee today looking at what other indicators you'd measure. So, for example, you'd measure things like environmental harm, natural resources. What impact does having the child poverty rate that we have on our economic performance? Things like, you'd factor in how much childcare cost for families, and that would be a negative in the overall account. So you'd be factoring those sort of things, poverty rates, early school leaving, you know, what's the long term, what is the cost to the state of all of that? But you do need to look at how you factor in well-being, and the health as well should be factored in. Depending on those on lower incomes usually report poorer levels of health. So that obviously has an impact, because it means they're more reliant on the health service. They probably have chronic illnesses. There's pressure on the health system. So those are the sort of things you need to be measuring as well to get an overall picture of how we're doing. It is positive that, you know, there is discussion around this, but, you know, it really remains to be seen if it will be done or not, because that would also put pressure on government, because you'd have to be measuring everything, not just economic indicators. You'd have to measure social indicators as well. And that might give you a very different picture of where you are.